Korea. What's the University Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Lori London reporting. President Donald Trump told the New York Times that if a special prosecutor investigating Russia's influence on last year's presidential election and possible collusion with his campaign expands to look at Trump's family finances unrelated to Russia, that would cross the line. Deputy Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders was asked Thursday by reporters if the president plans to fire the special prosecutor.
Look, I mean, I can't predict everything that could possibly take place in the future and what Mueller could potentially do that might create outrageous, you know, reason not to take action. So I'm not going to talk about hypotheticals. I can talk about where we are today, and that's the position of the president.
In a wide-ranging interview, Trump also expressed dismay with the decision by Attorney General Jeff Sessions to recuse himself from the Russia investigation. A Las Vegas parole board has granted U.S. football and screen star O.J. Simpson parole after 9 years in prison for armed robbery and kidnapping.
Mr. Simpson, I do vote to grant parole when eligible, and that will conclude this hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Hall of Fame athlete who was acquitted in a sensational murder trial in the 1990s cited good behavior while imprisoned on the more recent convictions and told the court he wants to be with his family. U.S. stocks were shaky between little gains and losses and finished about where they started after Europe's central bank left economic stimulus policies unchanged. The Dow and the S&P both closed slightly down. This is VOA. A nationwide strike against plans to rewrite the Constitution shut down much of Venezuela's capital Thursday before erupting in sporadic violence that left at least two young men dead. President Nicolas Maduro pledged to forge ahead with reshaping Venezuela's government despite the protests and a U.S. threat to levy economic sanctions if he continued. The Treasury Department is imposing a $2 million fine on ExxonMobil Corp. for showing reckless disregard for U.S. sanctions on Russia while Secretary of State Rex Tillerson was the oil giant's CEO. State Department spokeswoman Heather Neuert addressed reporters' questions Thursday on the matter.
He has been extremely clear in his recusal of anything having to do with Exxon. When this information came to us here at the State Department, it did not come to the secretary himself. It came to the Deputy Secretary John Sullivan. The secretary has taken this very seriously, that Exxon-related activities are not something that he is involved with here as Secretary of State.
The sanctions breach on Tillerson's watch raises significant questions about the ability to credibly enforce sanctions and to persuade European countries to keep doing so. News that Arizona Republican Senator John McCain has brain cancer triggered expressions of shock and well wishes across Washington and around the world. Capitol Hill witnessed an outpouring of support for a lion of the Senate. His best friend, Senator Lindsey Graham, says McCain can beat this.
So pray. I don't know. God knows how this ends, not me. But I do know this. This disease has never had a more worthy opponent.
A man who survived 5 years as a prisoner of war in Vietnam, John McCain's legendary grit and determination propelled him to six terms in the U.S. Senate. The agency investigating the fatal police shooting of an Australian woman in Minneapolis, Minnesota, in the U.S. says one of the officers was startled by a loud noise just moments before his partner fired the deadly shot. Justine Damond, a meditation teacher and bride-to-be, was killed late Saturday in the alley behind her home after she called emergency operators to report a possible sexual assault. Minneapolis Police Chief Janie Harto.
What I have assured the family is justice. The officer does have due process, and it's my role to ensure due process is followed so that justice can be served.
Damond's death has angered her fellow Australians. In a television interview Wednesday morning, Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull demanded answers on behalf of her family. And China's tightening control over use of virtual private networks in a move that foreign countries worry might disrupt their operations or jeopardize trade secrets. This is VOA.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, July 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia Supreme Court orders the Elections Commission to reinstate the candidature of Liberty Party's vice presidential candidate.
I had said earlier that I had explicit confidence in the judiciary of Liberia. So today is just the beginning of the wisdom for Liberty Party, and that we are going on to win October 10, 2017 presidential and general elections.
Harris Ekanwie is the vice presidential candidate of Liberia's Liberty Party. Meanwhile, the Elections Commission fears the ruling could impact the rest of this year's elections calendar. Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza visits Tanzania and urges Burundian refugees there to return home. The Cameroon's government rejects Amnesty International's war crimes accusations.
The government feels outraged, utterly denies such an allegation, which aims at putting disreputation on our army, defaming our army and our government. This is the purpose of this kind of report.
Issa Chiroma Bakari is Cameroon's information minister, and Gambian authorities discovered new bank accounts and landed properties associated with former President Yahya Jammeh. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia's Supreme Court on Thursday orders the country's Elections Commission to reinstate the candidature of Liberty Party's vice presidential candidate for the October 2017 elections. The Elections Commission had disqualified Harris Ekanwie's selection as vice presidential candidate because it said he did not resign his government position as managing director of the Forestry Development Authority 2 years earlier, as stipulated in the Code of Conduct for appointed government officials who are desirous of running for an elected post. In its ruling, the court said the Elections Commission did not exercise due process before disbarring Mr. Ekanwie from contesting. Ekanwie says the court ruling reinforces his explicit confidence in the judiciary and that it marks the beginning of victory for the Liberty Party in the October election.
Well, I think it's just the beginning of the victory for Liberty Party. I had said earlier that I had explicit confidence in the judiciary of Liberia and the wisdom of the justices. So today is just the beginning of the wisdom for Liberty Party, and that we are going on to win October 10, 2017 presidential and general elections.
The Supreme Court said that the National Elections Commission should serve you and the Liberty Party a notice of withdrawal. Have you received that notice?
I have not received any new notice from the Election Commission. However, our legal representations are not with me, and most likely whatever comes from there, they will be the first to receive it.
As you know, this whole code of conduct has almost polarized the Liberian society. Some people saying that the code of conduct should have been adhered to, and other people saying no. So what do you say to those who say the court, the Supreme Court, favor you and the Liberty Party?
Well, I would think they are very wrong. The Supreme Court was fair and just in its adjudication of this matter. Wherever we went wrong, they pointed it out. The only thing they said is that whatever violation I may have committed doesn't warrant denying me the opportunity to run, and that there were a series of punishment or sanction regime in the law, and choosing the most severe one for minor violation didn't look appropriate. That's how I see it. It is a law that has been validated by the Supreme Court, and I think we should abide by it. It is a new beginning. But in subsequent election, I think this will set the standard for everybody.
Now, you said the ruling means that you and the Liberty Party and Mr. Bramskin are on the way to victory. Mr. Bramskin has run for the presidency now for about the third time, and he has not won, let alone come at least second place. What do you think your selection mean now to the ticket?
Well, ask the Liberian people and see the momentum that Liberty Party has gained over the last few months. The party has matured from two previous elections that it lost, and that we have also brought some level of enthusiasm to the party we are following from across the country. And if you were to ask all over Liberia today, the whole country is jubilating because we had won. And so this shows that Liberty Party is ready. The Liberian people are ready for a change, and a change for the better.
I know the campaigning has not begun, but it seems to me that this is going to be a very tense campaign. What sort of campaign spirit would you like to see?
I would like to see a very cordial campaign spirit where we discuss the issues and not personality, where everybody put his or her platform to the people and stop castigating one another. Because the election will come and go, and all of us will be here as Liberians. We've been friends before, and we'll be friends again. So we should concentrate on politics, and politics all the way, and not personal attacks and acrimonious situations that makes people look at one another bad after the election.
Mr. Conway, congratulations again on your court victory, and thank you very much for joining us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you, Jim Balti.
Harrison Kanwia is vice presidential candidate for Liberia's Liberty Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The chair of Liberia's Elections Commission says while he does not disagree with Thursday's Supreme Court ruling on the candidature of Liberty Party's vice presidential candidate, he fears the ruling could impact the rest of this year's electoral calendar. In its ruling, the court ordered the commission to reinstate the candidature of Liberty Party's vice presidential candidate Harrison Kanwia for the October 2017 elections. The commission had disbarred Mr. Kanwia from running as vice presidential candidate because it said he violated the code of conduct for appointed government officials. For government appointed officials. Commission Chair Jerome Kokoya says his commission expects a flood of other candidates who might want due process in line with the Supreme Court ruling.
I haven't read the decision, you know, it just came out today. But from what I'm hearing, the standards that were needed for effective implementation of the code, we understand they were set. So if that's true, then that will help the commission to carry out its work. But the only thing is that given the due process requirement that have been imposed, that would interfere with our schedule. We had intended starting campaign on the 31st. So I am not too sure with this new development with respect to the new process requirement that date may still stand. But that's something that we have to discuss with the rest of my colleagues.
Exactly, Mr. Commissioner. The court was very critical of your commission, saying that you did not exercise due process. And you say you have a concern how that might impact the work of your commission.
Yeah, a concern. Not that we disagree. You know, the court is always right. So we're not taking issue with the court. Because when we were doing our planning, we didn't have any provision there for the kind of requirement that have been imposed with respect to the due process. You know, when you get due process, all the attending characteristics will require time. People may appear and then ask you that, look, I'm not ready, or my counsel is not here. So all of these requests you have to accommodate, and then you cannot grant due process and then don't abide by all of the attending conditions. So I'm just a little worried that that may interfere with the time because we really wanted to start a campaign on the 31st. But now that we have to first set up citations and then people appear, we conduct due process hearing. And most of the people, or some of them, if not all, may want to appear through counsel. So I'm just a little concerned that those kind of activities that we must accommodate if we have to afford a due process may interfere with our planning. That could take us a little more further.
Help me to understand, Mr. Chairman, besides Mr. Kanwia, the Liberty Party vice presidential candidate, who else did your commission reject? Is it former Ambassador Jeremiah Sonante? And those are the only two profile candidates. What do you mean that it might take a while to give due process? Do you have other candidates?
Well, yeah, sure. There are other candidates who the commission believe were in violation. I haven't read the opinion myself or the decision, but if what I'm hearing is correct, you may very well receive some people tomorrow because there have been some people in similar situations. like Mr. Conway and the other people that we regarded earlier.
Jerome Kokoya is chair of Liberia's Elections Commission. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, July 21st. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 and a half minutes past the hour. Cameroon's government has rejected an Amnesty International report accusing the military of war crimes. In its latest report, Amnesty International says detainees in Cameroon are subject to severe beatings and drownings, with some torture to death. It also stated that without evidence, security forces brutalize and torture alleged Boko Haram suspects. But Cameroon Information Minister Issa Chirumaka Bakari says the accusations are without merit, insisting that the report is aimed at embarrassing the military and by extension the government. He tells viewers Peter Clotty the Cameroonian government is gathering evidence to disprove the allegations.
The government feels outraged. Totally denied such an allegation, which aims at putting disreputation on our army, defaming our army and our government. This is the purpose of this kind of report. Why didn't Amnesty International bring forward the report, discuss with us, the Minister in Defense, the Minister of Communication, the spokesperson of the government? Why did they fail to do such a thing in order to have the contradiction? And I would like your listeners to know that Cameroon has signed all conventions dealing with the protection and promotion of human rights. It remains permanent the fact that our army, whoever a military, no matter which grade, is picked up, taken, red-handed, violating the human rights, is demobilized and brought to book, court-martial, and subsequently punished. This is the rule which is prevailing in our army, in our nation.
Detainees in Cameroon are subjected to severe beatings, agonizing straight positions, and drownings, with some tortured to death. This is a report. Will the Cameroonian government investigate and find the perpetrators who are behind this?
In case they have trustworthy, undeniable report, let them give this report to the government. We are going to assess it. And their investigation might be led, might be taken. The purpose of Boko Haram is to amputate part of our nation and to form their caliphate with part of our nation. The responsibility of the nation as a whole behind the army and the head of state is to deliver the goods, which means to protect our nation and way of life and societal way of life. This, first of all, has to be understood. The second thing is that we are collateral victims. We are collateral victims. Not to say anything about our economy, our finances are being beaten by Boko Haram action. Now, we are victims, and we are being presented by Amnesty International as we were aggressor, we were executioner. We deny it, we refuse it, and we are ready, so soon as we receive the document, our experts will focus the mind on it. And the next week, Monday or Tuesday, I will give a press conference during which I will debunk this allegation. On Tuesday, send your representative and we will produce whatever is possible to be produced. But first of all, we have to receive an official notification of this report.
I'm very aware of the constitutional responsibility of the government to protect its territorial integrity as well as to ensure the protection of civilians. However, they are saying in fighting or maintaining the country's territorial integrity, there have been issues of extrajudicial murders.
As far as the petitioning of Amnesty International is concerned, the government is taking the necessary time when we are in position of this report. We will take time and we will commit experts to analyze and to issue a report. But as I tell you, next week, not far than next week, the first element that we have which contradicts Amnesty International report will be aired during a press conference that I am about to give next week.
Issa Chiroma Bakari is Cameroon's information minister. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital Yaoundé. Gambian authorities say they have found 7 new bank accounts and landed properties associated with former President Yahya Jammeh. Sini Marina reports from Banjul.
Gambia's Justice Department froze Jammeh's domestic asset in May, a move that was the instant seizure of 131 landed properties, 88 bank accounts and 14 companies and number of livestock. The latest discovery brings the number of banks associated with the former leader to 95, as authorities race to seize Jammeh's asset while a commission look into allegations of corruption and financial mismanagement. Meanwhile, President Barrow has turned down his Attorney General Abubakar Ba Tambedu's offer to resign following the leaking of an audio between a special prosecutor and the wife of embattled former spy chief, standing trial for killing former opposition activist Solo Sande. Addressing the press at the presidency in Banjul on Thursday, President Adama Barrow's press secretary said the president has trust and confidence in his justice minister and therefore reject his resignation offer.
A tape on a conversation between a family member of one of the people in the NIA 9 case and Sheriff Tambedu, a prosecution team member, has been leaked. In this light, Justice Minister Abubakar Tambedu, a brother to Sheriff, felt strongly about the content of the leakage and offered his resignation to President Barrow yesterday. However, having carefully considered the resignation offer, the president rejected it because of the trust and confidence he has in the minister.
The special prosecutor resigned on Monday to maintain the integrity of the trial against 9 former intelligence officers accused of killing an opposition activist, Solo Sande. The attorney general, a former UN prosecutor and a brother to the special prosecutor, had criticized the police for the arrest of the suspect after it appeared that it occurred without his knowledge and investigations were rushed. Call for AG Tambedu's resignation gained ground when special prosecutor, his brother Sheriff Tambedu, met with the wife of the ex-spy chief, Yanguwa Baji, where they discussed the case and a plea that was offered to Mr. Baji. Also addressing the press on Thursday in Banjul, the justice minister announced the latest findings on Jammeh asset.
We continue to receive additional information in respect of a significant number of assets purportedly belonging to him and his close associates. We, however, want to make sure that the reports we are getting about ownership of these latest assets are factual and accurate. We have now filed a supplemental list of assets before the High Court in Banjul for the inclusion of these newly discovered assets in the freezing order. So far, this new list includes 49 additional landed properties located in the Greater Banjul area, bringing the total number of known landed properties owned by former President Yahya Jammeh to 180 in the country.
Meanwhile, the former ruling party, now in the opposition, has demanded Gambian authorities to drop charges against dozens of its supporters that were arrested during clashes between protesters and West Africa Stabilization Force in Banjul. The authorities charged at least 23 people, including 2 soldiers, for taking part in the protests and have since been released on bail. Reporting for VOA News in Banjul, I am Sini M.K. Marina.
President Pierre Nkurunziza has urged Burundian refugees in Tanzania to return home. He made the call Thursday during a visit to Tanzania, his first outing since his re-election in 2015. Moses Aviarimana reports from Bujumbura.
The last time Pierre Nkurunziza left the country was on May 13, 2015, when he attended the East African Heads of State Summit in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, to dialogue on the political crisis that erupted in April 2015. During that visit, it was when the coup d'etat was announced in Bujumbura, but later after 24 hours, it was foiled and the president managed to return back to the country. According to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, more than 380,000 Burundian refugees were registered since 2015. President Pierre Nkurunziza called on Burundi refugees to repatriate.
We also talked about the security situation, most especially on those who fled to Tanzania, and that in Burundi there is peace and stability. Those who are in refugee camps should voluntarily return to their country. Some of the refugees fled not that because of the insecurity, but rather were paid by some people.
President Nkurunziza met with his Tanzanian counterpart John Pombe Magufuli in Ngara, located in northwestern part of Tanzania. The Burundi president said more than 150,000 Burundians were repatriated without the UN support. Tanzanian Home Affairs Minister Mwigulu Nchemba said that 200,000 Burundians were given Tanzanian citizenship since 2006.
Now we have Burundian refugees in the camps, 247,000, and those are after those who have voluntarily returned to their country, more than 150,000, after the security situation improved, as the Burundian president said.
Mr. Nchemba said at least 5,000 Burundian refugees have requested to be repatriated to their country. President John Pombe Magufuli said that he has ordered a stop to the issuing of citizenship to.
Let's report Moses Havyarimana reporting from Bujumbura. Stand up for Daybreak Africa's person here is Samson Omalley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Friday morning to you, Samson.
A very good morning to you, James. We begin in Morocco, where the Confederation of African Football Executive Committee has approved that the African Cup of Nations will be expanded to be contested for by 24 teams, up from 16 from the 2019 edition of the tournament in Cameroon. CAF has also opted to switch the continental showpiece from January to February to June-July, although the tournament will still take place every 2 years rather than moving it to a four-year schedule. The decision was reached following the two-day CAF symposium in Rabat, Morocco, where the June-July date will put an end to a long-standing feud between CAF and European clubs, unhappy with losing many of the African players for a month at the crucial part of the season every other year. And following several reports and insinuations that Cameroon may not be ready to host the 2019 AFCON, the country's sports minister has said that the 2019 African Cup of Nations will go ahead in the country despite concerns over the pace of preparations. Recent reports suggest that stadium construction is behind schedule, while Cameroon also faces economic problems. Ismail Bindong said despite security concerns, social and economic crisis, the Cameroonian government is totally committed to do everything possible for the Nation Cup to go ahead. And now to Ghana, where one of Ghana's biggest football clubs, Asante Kotoko's coach, Steve Pollock, has left the Komfa Anokye Teaching Hospital, where he has been on admission for 1 week. The Englishman suffered injuries from last Wednesday night's fatal accident involving the team bus with 18 players and technical team members who were returning to Kumasi from Accra, where they played Inter Allies in Ghana Premier League match. Unfortunately, the club deputy equipment officer, Thomas Obi, Bieng Asare, lost his life. In athletics news, Uganda will not have the complement of his star athletes Stephen Kiprotich and Moses Kipsiro ahead of the 2017 IWAF World Championship in London next month. Both athletes opted out of the championship even after they achieved the qualifying mark for the marathon. Kiprotich, a gold medalist at the 2012 London Olympics and the 2013 World Championships, and Kipsiro, a four-time Commonwealth Games gold medalist, were expected to boost the chances of Uganda winning medals in London. The development is another blow for Team Uganda, who this week also lost female marathoner Andrew Yekasi due to an ankle injury. And now to basketball news. Algeria grabbed the last spot for the semis at the ongoing 2017 FIBA Under-16 African Championship. The North African will take on Mali today at the Phoenix Gymnasium for a place in Saturday's finals. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington. And do have a good weekend.
And that's it for this Friday, July 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Barton in Washington, hoping that you will have a very good weekend.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.